The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning, and welcome to Talk Saratoga on this last day of Saturday of May. And boy, I'll tell you, time is going by so fast, I can't believe it. When I was a kid, I always used to hear my grandparents say those famous words that the older you get, the faster time goes by. And, you know, when you're younger, you say, baloney, I can't wait to get to be in high school, and then I can't wait to graduate. And I think it hits you probably when you're in your 30s because you're out of your teens and 20s, and you say, oh boy, I'm an adult now, and then the years start flying by. But anyway, I'm glad you're with us this morning, and we have a special guest. Our all-star this morning is not only a friend and a fellow Kiwanian, but she's just a downright really nice I'm going to call you a girl, April, because you are a girl, and you're so young that we'll call it that way. April Wagan, and April, thank you for being with us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. You know that. April, there's some things that, since COVID, have changed businesses and how we do business and how we try and get our help immensely. First, just tell us a little bit about the business, and I want to get into it a little bit more later, but tell us a little bit about the business, and then we'll talk about what happened.
Okay. Well, I run a small janitorial firm here in Saratoga Springs. I started this in 1999 more as a part-time endeavor, and it just kind of took off really quick, so somehow it turned into a full-time business. We do janitorial cleaning nights and weekends. We clean some houses during the day. I've known a lot of real estate agents and brokers, so we do a lot of real estate cleaning, cleanouts, closeouts. And I used to subcontract all of my carpet and floor care work, but then that person retired, so I ended up buying a carpet cleaning truck a couple years ago. And so now we do carpets, floor work, tile, and grout. So pretty much just about everything having to do with cleaning.
Yeah, well, I know you have a fledgling business, and it's only grown, like you said, over the years. And we'll get into some more of what you do, but COVID came along, and how did that affect the business?
That was a catch-22 because most of our work had to do with cleaning offices, and a lot of the people stopped coming to offices. So we had quite a few of our clients that just said, don't come for a while. We actually lost a few clients because they never ended up going back to the office. But we cleaned for a lot of manufacturing facilities, and they wanted more cleaning. They couldn't shut down, so they had staff working all the time. So instead of working, for example, once a week or twice a week, they wanted us every day. So we kind of had to move staff around, retrain staff. The problem with COVID was that if somebody was potentially exposed, they had to be out. So if somebody runs a professional company and you have to work from home for a week or two, you generally take your computer home, and it's not a problem. With cleaning, you can't do that. So the big problem was, you know, if we had, say, 100 offices to clean and our staff was down, we had nobody to clean those offices. So the big problem was recruiting people and making sure all of these buildings got done on a regular basis. And I don't think I had a day off in a year and a half.
No, I know. April's also in Kiwanis with me, which is a service organization, and we and on Facebook friends, and I know you've said that many times, it's just nonstop. Well, one of the things you had mentioned about, COVID and the offices didn't stay open and the manufacturers did. And, you know, the hardest part about being in business, I found out when I had my businesses, is that health is the number one, I don't want to say problem, but it's the number one headache in a business. Only from the standpoint of if you lose somebody, you have to hire them and train them. Then if they leave, you have to hire someone else and spend the time and the money to retrain them. Yes. And then a month later, if they decide, well, I don't want to work anymore, you have to hire help and retrain them. And it can be an expensive. I think that's probably one of the biggest expense, not probably the biggest, but one of the biggest expenses is training employees and then have to retrain new recruits.
Yes. The biggest part was trying to find people that I wanted in offices. I had a lot of applicants, but I just didn't trust them. They had, I don't hire anybody with criminal backgrounds because I can't, because sometimes they're alone in an office. Yeah. So if I don't want them in my house, I can't hire them.
And that's a liability for you.
It's a huge liability.
If something ever happens, that they're going to blame you.
Right. So I had to be very, very careful about who I hired, which actually brought down the pool of applicants considerably. Very, very few applicants that we would actually consider. And then the other part was a lot of people want to work, but they didn't have transportation. They couldn't get to the office. I had lots of staff that I loved and I trained and they did a really good job, but they just would never, they couldn't get there. And I thought about hiring a service to go around and pick up staff. But at some point I had to consider some sort of profit.
Oh yeah.
You know, I could go around and hire, there's a bunch of companies out there that, you know, run car services. I could get them to the office, but I'd have to lower their pay to get them there or charge them for that, and then they wouldn't work.
Right.
So it was really a catch-22 trying to find the right people. And then once they came and trained, I had to make sure I paid them enough so that they actually stayed. It's really hard work.
Well, no, it is. It's very hard work. And but there's people that like to do it.
I'd love to find those people.
But so we move on from COVID and having it difficult, you know, especially going into people's homes, I would assume, and the business world kind of stopped and restarted itself, and it's not the same. But also today in many businesses, I know the company I work for, and I stop for a cup of coffee every morning on the way back home, a national chain, the great people, but they can't get help. They cannot get help no matter, and everybody said, oh, raise the minimum wage to $15. You're going to get more. Well, that didn't work. So now the minimum, not the legal minimum wage, but now businesses are paying $16 an hour and they still can't get help.
No, they can't. It's the customer service oriented businesses, restaurants, fast food chains,
retail stores,
cleaning. They're the ones that are heavily dependent upon staff. It's hard work, and you deal with a lot of rude people sometimes. The patients in the public lately has really gone down. And so people nobody wants to deal with that anymore.
Right.
Nobody wants to work really hard only to have somebody yell at them for something that they have no control over.
Right. You're right. We are getting to be a society of texting on your phone and that's it. The socialization with people and to do conversation with face-to-face or over the phone, you can't we're losing our sense, number one, of humor. We're losing our the patience that we used to have with people. And even as far as talking about any subject, we used to be able to agree to disagree and have good conversation. Today, right. You're either right or you're wrong, and it's 100%. I mean,
there's nothing in the middle, right? People unfriend people. They stop talking to people just for having different opinions.
Yeah.
And that drives me up a wall. Because I have friends on both sides of the aisle, and, I just tell them, I understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily agree with it, but you know what? Hey, let's go out and have a cocktail on Friday. I can still be friends with people, but some of the younger generation has a really hard time with that.
Sure. Well, it's funny. I mean, we're veering off a little bit.
Right.
And that's okay, because I haven't seen you in a while. But I had a friend way back who was in politics, and he said, you know what we used to do? There'd be Democrats and Republicans on the council, and we used to argue like heck. I mean, argue like crazy. He said, but after the council meeting, we all went out for a drink.
Right.
And, that's how it is, I think, with everybody. I mean, but not anymore.
No.
I mean, it's a sad state that we're coming to, and it goes down to the fact that I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, when I had my businesses, I mean, employees are the face of the company.
They are.
And you can have the nicest sign on the side of your vehicle. You can have your picture with a big smile on it. But the employees that are doing the work are the face of the company. And if they're disgruntled or they're argumentative with a customer, that's devastating for you.
It is. And I've had, I do a lot of talking individually with staff members. And the big point I try to get across is they are the face of the company. And they don't understand that sometimes. They feel like they're coming in, they're going into an office to clean, they're dumping trash, they're vacuuming, cleaning kitchens and bathrooms, and people don't really see them, so they feel sort of invisible. But I tell them that they are the company. I sign the checks. I get the clients in the background. But for that company, they are a Profresh Cleaning, so they're actually more important to the organization than I am. And so I've spent a lot of time trying to get our culture in our company to accept everybody as they are. Nobody's the same. Everybody has faults. Everybody has fortes. And we need to accept them and work with what we have. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get the staff to understand that they are the most important part. And it really does. It has helped.
I think that makes an employee feel better about themselves. And, what part they do play in the company, even though nobody notices them, quote unquote.
Right.
They do.
We actually have books in all of our clients' offices that we sign. It's our communication log. And a lot of companies have gone digital. And we do have a portal that our clients can write us notes to. But nobody wants to get on a computer and try to remember their password and then reset the password because they don't do it often, and then send us a note about something that either was done really great or something that may have been forgotten. But when we have the communication log right there in the employee lounge, they can say, the kitchen looks really great today, or, hey, we're having some VIPs coming in next week. Can you, concentrate on the conference room maybe? Mm-hmm. So that communication log, I tell the staff, write more than just Sally was here from 8 to 11. Sally, tell them what you did, what you concentrated on, what you see that needs some attention, and you'll take care of it next time. Do they have any special requests? And this is your office, so you're the person for them, and that has actually really helped a lot.
That's neat, because that makes your client feel like they can talk to
exactly
person, even through a portal, and get their wishes conveyed so that the next time, like you said, that, you know, it's going to benefit them.
Right. And there's something about actual handwriting than just a digital text. It's a lost art, and seeing somebody write something in a book and sign their name makes it very, very, very personal.
Yeah.
And that the keeping it personal is what is office cleaning all about. Hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm in charge of your office cleaning, and I'm going to do a really good job. And the more you have that relationship, the better the staff cleans. They spend a couple of extra minutes because they know Joe has a dust allergy. So they'll dust Joe's office a little bit more thorough than what would normally be called for.
Sure. You know, I think as a client, it would give me peace of mind knowing that no matter what, good or bad, I could contact you and get a result, you know, get a situation resolved. So many times people will not say anything, and it gets to a point where I've had it with her.
Right.
You know, I've had it with them, you know. Where if they conveyed the message, you know, maybe a month before, then you have a good working relationship, and they know that they can say, hey, I'm going to call April up and just let her know what. I mean, even if they put it in a log and they wanted to talk, you know.
Right. Communication is key.
Yeah, it is.
Communication is really key. I tell staff and I tell clients, I'm not a mind reader. You know, we generally look for trash, but if you have three trash bins in one office, we might not see that third one. Or, you know, we look for one, we dump it, and, you know, once we really get to know your building, then we'll understand, oh, by the way, Fred has three garbage cans and two recycle bins in his office. Make sure you get all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they not necessarily tell us that, you know, we'll grab the one, and we're used to seeing one trash in an office. So
right.
It's all communication. And we try to take care of our clients' special requests. Sometimes we can't in a short time frame, but we do the best we can. It's not perfect.
Well, you know, who is? I mean, who is? There was only one perfect person in the world from the beginning of time.
Right.
And nobody else had come close. So, like I say, you have to have good rapport. And, you know, so today, I mean, I think every business is kind of hurting, trying to play catch up all the time because of lack of being able to hire anybody. I mean, it is a problem. I mean, can't hire anybody. There are people that will not work.
No. I have been without somebody to run my carpet cleaning truck for almost a year. I was able to hire somebody, and he worked for 2 weeks, and he did a great job. And he had so many personal issues in his own life that he just stopped showing up. He won't return a phone call. It has nothing to do with the way we treated him. I know that. I just know he had so many personal issues. He was forced to relocate. I don't even know where he went. So I've put decent salary, pretty good salaries on Indeed. I can't find anybody to clean carpets. So I've been subbing that out. You know, I've just been giving all those clients away to somebody else. Most cleaning companies could have doubled or tripled their business, even more in the past 2 years if we had staff to do it.
Yeah. Well, like we said, I think that's every business. I mean,
right.
There's businesses that close 2 days a week because they can't, the staff they have, you know, they can't push them for 7 days. So they, you know, they work 5 days, get their 40 or 45 hours in, and that's it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a nationwide problem. And I don't know how they say that unemployment is great. Employment is fantastic over the country. Record number of jobs. Well, I don't know if they're in the real world. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about the business. I know you have three facets of, you know, homes, offices, and then pre-construction and that. Just talk a little bit about what you do in homes. Let's start with that.
So I used to not clean homes. For the longest time, I didn't do it. I started out doing that when I started, when I expanded my business back in 2005. And we started doing residential cleaning back then, and I ended that in 2007 because it just wasn't my forte. And I didn't do it for the longest time. And then with COVID, people started spending more time at home. And they were like, oh, we don't have time to clean our house. We're busy. We've got sports. We've got kids. You know, things are going on. I need somebody to come in and clean it. And every day I'd probably get five or six phone calls. I don't do that. I don't do that. I don't do that. And then one day I said, well, why don't I do that anymore? And I had some staff that said, well, we'd love to do that. So we trained staff and we hired a little bit more and we started going into homes. But I was finding out, you know, we still do a few homes, but the majority of them, it's just still not our forte. I've had clients that say, hey, I have a 7,000 square foot home and, you know, my budget's $150. And I'm like, that's about 3 hours worth of work. I don't know how I can clean a 7,000 square foot house in that amount of time. So I just didn't even take I didn't even waste the client's time by going down to look at it. I just said, I can't do that. So in homes, the ones that we do, it's a full cleaning or whatever the client wants. So our specialties are bathrooms and kitchens, you know, dusting floors, vacuuming, basically whatever a client wants us to do. And it's different for every client.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
So,
I'm not thinking of building by any means. This pre-construction cleanup and post-construction cleanup kind of hit my eye when I went to your website. You have a great website, by the way.
Thanks.
And that's https://aprilfresh.org. So if anybody wants to go there to see what, you know, what it's about, or you are a business owner and you'd like someone to come in and clean the office because you don't have the help to do it, and, you know, maybe April will have the help to do it, well, you know, you can go to that website. It's great. So post-construction cleanup, what is that about?
So we work with a few builders in the area. Mostly when they get done building a house, there's always residual dust. You know, the bathrooms need to be shined up. It's not generally a heavy-duty clean as far as scrubbing, but it's a lot of dust removal, a lot of vacuuming, a lot of wiping down, cleaning inside and outside of windows, cleaning the sawdust out of cabinets, kitchen cabinets, bathroom cabinets, wiping all those down. What we do that most people don't do and they don't realize that they need it is to clean on top of the kitchen cabinets. Mm-hmm. There's always sawdust up there. And even when we clean empty homes for real estate, we'll clean up there and see sawdust from when the house was built.
Wow.
20, 30 years ago. so we try to get that off. It gets into the air and you can actually smell it. If you knew what you were smelling.
Right.
So when we leave a post-construction house ready for move-in, there's not a speck of dust around. There's no sawdust. It's all just nice and clean. You can move in without having to worry about anything.
That's neat.
So.
Yeah, that's neat. Because like you say, there's always stuff.
There's always stuff around.
You know, sheetrock.
Sheetrock dust flies everywhere.
Oh yeah,
it gets into the air vents. It flies out.
Yeah, it's all fine of a
right.
powder that you know, people don't realize it until they turn the air conditioning on or the heat,
and then it just starts coming out.
Right, smoke gets in your eyes. Where's it coming from? You know,
we just had a place that we cleaned. It was an empty residential, and it was like they had like confetti papers.
Oh.
And the girls cleaned it up, and they took pictures and said, yep, it's all clean. And then the homeowner came home a couple hours later, and she's like, well, this wasn't vacuumed. And I said, what do you mean? And apparently it's in the air vents. And so every time the air came on, more confetti-type stuff would fly out of the air vents. And we vacuumed the air vents, but we didn't take them apart and clean them. I mean, that's a whole different type of clean.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just you've got to be very detail-oriented. But
this is not anything to do with April Fresh, all right? I drive school bus for special needs kids for an independent bus company here in Saratoga, who, by the way, if you're planning on getting married or, you want to take a trip, you can just call Upstate Transit, and they aim to please, and they do a great job, too. But there was this one, this is before COVID, there was this one lady who used to eat potato chips on her break in her bus. I mean, the big bags, you know. So, I don't know, my run didn't have school, and she was out, so I ran her run. Well, let me tell you something. You talk about this, when you hit dust, this is just a crazy story. So I turned the air conditioning on in the van, and I thought I was in the middle of a parade. There were potato chip crumbs coming out of the froster, the slots, and I thought I was in a blooming parade. Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm looking for a flag to carry.
Stuff just gets everywhere.
I mean, the dust gets everywhere. Hey, you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio, and we're back after some technical updates here in the studio. If you'd like to call us, just pick up your phone and dial 518-580-5783, 518-580-5783, and we try not to do it over the computer. So you're going to have to call and talk, as April said before. So I want to veer off of this for a little bit, and we can get back to the cleaning industry, because you've been in it for so long, and it's neat that you're a female-owned business, and you started out a long time ago, and you've grown to become a great company. And I mean, I see your vehicles all over the place, and I know you personally, so I know your employees don't get away with anything. They have to do it the way you want them to do it, because you have that ethic. So
right. Hey, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it to the best of our ability.
That's right.
I used to want to be one of those perfect, always five-star, always, it has to be done perfectly. Then I realized that's a little bit difficult to shoot for all the time. We do pride ourselves on detail, but yeah. At the same time, we're now working within budgets. So somebody who wants a $500 clean, but they're only willing to pay $100, okay, well, let's try to see what we can do with that. But don't complain, you're not getting a $500 clean when you're only paying $100.
Right.
So the budgets have been interesting to work with.
We hit on a subject a while ago, and I don't know if, we talked about what happened during COVID and how offices cut back in that. And, that's a big thing today. More people work out of their homes, and offices have cut back on the space they rent because my daughter works for a bank and a mortgage department. There are six girls in her department, and they were offered, if they wanted to work out of the house, as long as they got their work done, they had to meet their quota they did as if they were in the office, or if they wanted to come down and, drive down. They're in Clifton Park, so it's not that bad of a drive, but three of the girls, including my daughter, decided to work out of their house, and the other three wanted to go in the office. So they were able to cut back on their office space in half, which was good for them, I guess, but and that makes it tough, too, to do business today in your profession because, like we talked about a little bit in the beginning, that, hey, everybody's cutting back, and it's tough.
It is. I actually haven't had too many of my clients cut back. We had six clients that we lost because they closed their offices, and they just never came back. Hmm. But those six spots filled up almost instantly. People want clean. Most of our clients are long-term clients. So, I I have that meeting with them ahead of time. If they're only looking for somebody to dump their trash, then we're not for them.
Right.
We're going to clean your office and we're going to keep it healthy. We clean for health. So we're going to clean it. We're going to do it right. And if you're not willing to do that, then that's fine. We're just, go find somebody else. We're just not the ones for you.
Yeah. And as we said, we were talking about the employees are the face of your company. Long-time clients are the best form of advertising you can have.
Yes.
Because not only do they spread the word, but they are, that means you're doing a great job. Because I know when I had my garden center and landscaping business on that one, I used to get more referrals because people were happy and I didn't even have to advertise.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just long-term clients are your best form of advertising.
They do. I try to spend more money keeping our clients than we do trying to get new ones.
Yep.
I mean, everybody advertises. It's kind of part of the game of owning a business. But I tell our staff, our current clients are our most important ones that we have. So we need to do what we need to do in order to keep them and make them happy. Within reason. Again, oh, yeah. It's somebody wants us to be there for 12 hours, but they're only willing to pay us for two. Well, then we have a disconnect, and then we have to have that conversation.
Right. Well, so, and that's not, that expectation really shouldn't even be. But,
exactly.
But I'm sure it happens, you know, part of business. Let's veer off from April Fresh for a while. And in my description of you and my when I posted online, you're a trailblazer, I put.
I am.
Tell us about that, how you got started and what you've done and what you want to do in that.
So part of the reason I started April Fresh Cleaning was that I had left the field of teaching. I had grown up and I loved my second grade teacher, Mrs. Rubin, and I wanted to be just like her. And so when I was like 7 years old, I said, I'm going to be a teacher. And that was my only goal. And I didn't really stray from that ever. And so I went to college, I got my teaching degree, and I came back to Saratoga, and I substitute taught for years and years and years. And there just weren't any teaching jobs available. I mean, even Mrs. Rubin was still teaching. They were all still teaching. So I kind of got frustrated with that. And then I had a cousin who passed away at the age of 21, and he died in a house fire. And it was the first real tragedy our family had ever really dealt with. And I mean, yeah, we had grandparents pass away and we had, you know, people pass away of old age, but sure, nothing like a 21-year-old kid dying in house fire. So, you know, I always liked adventure and I was frustrated. My cousin died. I couldn't get a job. I was substitute teaching, which is like glorified babysitting in the high school. And I did a lot of subbing in the junior high. Ask anybody what substitute teaching in the junior high is like, and they will tell you stories forever. It's rough.
I'm sure teaching, not only a substitute teacher, teaching in a junior high has to be very tough, especially today.
It is. I don't know what it's like today because I haven't been in the classroom in a long time. But I actually love that age. I love that middle school, junior high, high school age when the kids are coming into themselves and they're learning about themselves and what society will handle, what it won't, and they're coming out with their own personalities. And I loved that. Mm-hmm. But it was still difficult. So I started hiking again. I used to hike with the Girl Scouts, but I got out of that. And so I had some friends at work that we started going on day hikes together, and I loved it. And then just out of the blue, I said, you know what? I'm going to go hike the Appalachian Trail. And this was back in 1996. It wasn't real popular at the time. A lot of people had hiked it, but nobody really knew about it. So I attempted it in 96, and I went out, and I bought all new equipment, and I was off. I got a ride to Georgia, and I was off on the trail. And I did no training at all. And I got injured almost right away, and I limped for 400 miles and then came home, and I was really upset. And somehow I went back 2 years later and I did a whole complete through hike of the Appalachian Trail.
Wow.
And
how long was that?
I started March 29th and it was, at the time, it was 2,176 miles.
Wow.
And I finished October 10th.
Wow.
Now,
was that continuous?
That was continuous, except for the fact that I had gotten injured again. So I did take 2 weeks off. I took about 10 days off in the early part because my grandmother passed away and I came home for the funeral. And then I got injured in Pennsylvania and I took about 2 weeks off to heal. But I didn't come home, so
yeah.
I just kind of stayed out there and healed up and limped out and pretty much limped all the way to Maine.
Boy, is that why they call you Limpy?
My trail name is Trail Gimp, yes.
Trail
so...
Gimp.
Out on the Appalachian Trail, most people don't use their real names.
Really?
Nope. You're given a trail name based on your idiosyncrasies and your habits and just things about you. So I limped all the time, so I became Trail Gimp.
Okay. Well, that's why I've never hiked the Appalachian Trail, because my name would be something nobody would want. And I do want to just make a comment. You started hiking with the Girl Scouts, and when I was in junior high, I tried to hike with the Girl Scouts, and I was turned away. So I just want to put that out there. That's why I couldn't hike the Appalachian Trail. But anyway, I always wished I had hiked at a younger age instead of, you know, I mean, I was playing sports all the time, you know, baseball.
Right.
And like you said, hiking wasn't that big back then. Now, it's huge. I mean, everybody...
It's big business now.
Is it really big business?
It's big business now from the manufacturers because everybody started getting into lightweight hiking.
Okay.
You know, I had an aluminum pot, and, I mean, my base weight was, before food, was probably 35 or 40 pounds, 30 pounds. I don't really know. It changed all the time. But... You can get base weight down, meaning your sleepwear, your sleep system, your pots and pans and food supply. You can get all of that down, including your backpack, down to about 10, 15 pounds now.
Really?
It is, but it's super expensive. I mean, you can get an aluminum or stainless steel pot, or you can have a titanium pot. And I don't even know what a titanium pot costs. I haven't needed to buy one, but if you're hiking 2,000 miles, now you want the titanium pot because it weighs next to nothing. And if you're carrying everything on your back for 2,000 miles, you want it as light as possible.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So, people are counting fractions of an ounce now. I haven't been out on the Appalachian Trail in a while myself, but I read the blogs. I'm on Facebook with a bunch of people. And I just giggle because they're like, oh, no, you shouldn't carry that. And I'm like, it weighs a half an ounce. And they're like, no, it's too heavy. If you're not using it multiple times a day, it's not worth the weight. So some people are going hardcore, and that's big business in the world.
Now, do you want to do that again some part? I mean, the 2,000-mile bit, I can see maybe doing it once and being
so I don't know. I love the romance of it. I love the adventure of it. Trails take you to small towns of America that you're never going to see on a road trip. And I love that. But in the back of my mind, I still remember myself telling myself, if you ever go across country again, do it in an RV.
You know what that means? That means age plays a part in it.
I know. I would love to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, which is even longer. It's 2,400 miles from Mexico to Canada through California, Oregon, and Washington.
Okay.
But I have that nagging in the back of my head. If you're going to go across country, go in an RV. If you're going to go across country, go in an RV. Don't walk.
Don't walk, man.
But there are people that do. People love it. I have friends that, you know, have hiked 10, 15, 20,000 miles.
Really?
You know, they've just, they've hiked the Appalachian Trail and they fell in love with it. So then they hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. And then they hiked the Continental Divide Trail, which is over 3,000 miles. And they just can't get enough. They're building more and more trails across the country that are long-distance trails. There's one. There's the Buckeye Trail that goes around Ohio. And then there's some northern trail. I don't even know where it goes. It's across the United States in the northern section. So it's like 4,000 miles.
Well, maybe, you know, there's... I know my in-laws once took a cruise, an Alaskan cruise, but they took the train. They did this when they were first married, I guess, and they took a train out of somewhere up north, crossed the northern part of the U.S., maybe even had gone into Canada a little bit, and ended up in the state of Washington. So maybe not that exact,
right?
Run, but maybe that's the track there.
Yeah. I do know it goes through North Dakota, Minnesota, a couple other places.
Yeah.
I've seen maps of it. If you pull up long distance trails in America, you'll find tons of them.
Yeah,
but the Appalachian Trail is the most well known.
Yeah. Now, excuse me, did you ever run into any trouble?
I did not run into trouble. So there have been a few nefarious things on the Appalachian Trail. There have been a few murders. And they get national attention because it's so rare. I hiked in 98 as a thru-hiker totally by myself, as a female by myself. But I was never by myself. It's like going to school on, you know, by yourself the first day of school.
Right.
You're going by yourself, and so are 1,000 other people. And so you find your people, they call them tramleys now, trail families, and you find your people and you hang out with them and you hike with them. And that lasts for a day or 2 days, a week, a month, maybe the whole trail. There have been people that met on the Appalachian Trail, they get married at the end of it.
Really?
There's a bunch of trail romance families that, you know, they've just gotten married. So
it's interesting.
You find like-minded people out there. I mean, it takes a certain person to give up all the creature comforts and
sure.
to go hike 2,000 miles. So you find your people.
Yeah. So if you hike the Appalachian Trail and you find somebody and get married, and then you go to hike that Pacific Trail and you get a divorce.
Yeah. I don't know how many people have done that. I've not kept up on the stats. I am sure. So when you're hiking, though, the other person sees you at your worst.
Yeah.
When you are cold and hungry and tired and miserable and it's raining or, you know, it's freezing out there and your water bottle's frozen and, you know, Mother Nature can throw its worst and you can be at your absolute worst. And if somebody you're hiking with still loves you, that's going to last.
Well, sure, it is. Better. But no, and you have something in common, too.
Yes.
So that's part of it. When you're, you know, they always say, like, if you're together all the time, you know, you can get in arguments.
And, right.
But if you're doing something like that, and it's a passion for two people, and you can do that trail and form that bond, that's pretty neat.
Yes,
you know,
it
really is. I chuckle when I go back. I chuckle a lot, by the way. when I'm talking to a guest and it brings something in my life about junior high school, you taught. And sometimes the kids in junior high are finding themselves and, you know, they're going through a change and it can be a little crazy. I didn't have that option when I was going to school because I went to Catholic school and the nuns would not allow you to stray only in a square box, and anything outside of that you were pretty disciplined, which I look back on now and it was good.
Right.
But yeah, so it just makes me chuckle when I think, because I used to substitute teach in a trade school in a BOCES where I grew up in Fulton and Montgomery counties, and I tell you, the kids could be a handful.
Yes.
You know?
The key is to find what they're good at and embrace it.
Yeah.
And get them to embrace it and not discipline just because it's not your forte doesn't mean it's not their forte.
Exactly. Well, so. I was lucky because the business I was in at the time was seasonal. And my father knew the director of the BOCES Center, and so he had me sub in a couple of the areas that I knew. But after a while, there were only two classes he wouldn't let me sub in. One was cosmetology and the other was nursing. So I did, you know. But, you know, when in a trade school, the kids are there because they love a trade. Right. Auto body or horticulture, right, or whatever.
They've got that passion.
Yeah. So it's really a lot better than, let's say, a public school setting or parochial school setting. Just getting off of the trailblazing a little bit, you're becoming an author.
Yes. So when I was growing up, I loved books. I was always one of those kids that, you know, their mom would say, go to bed. And I would read books under the covers with a flashlight until the wee hours of the morning. I cannot read a book without reading the whole thing straight through. I have a really hard time with that. So in my 20s, I actually started writing a children's book. And I got about 50 pages of handwritten work in. And then life got busy and I put it away and I forgot about it. But I'm friends with somebody on LinkedIn somehow, and she lives in Australia and she's a book coach and author. And somehow I saw a post. She was looking for writers to create a chapter for an anthology she was putting together. And it was all about your spirituality and how you found your spirituality. And so she was looking for authors, you know, to write inspirational pieces. And right away I thought about my Appalachian Trail hikes, because even though I hiked by myself, I don't feel like I was ever by myself. I would do a lot of talking to my cousin who passed away. I would do a lot of talking to my grandmother that just passed away, and anybody that was in heaven, I would talk to all the time, like they were there. Right. And, not that I would have conversations in the woods, but they were more conversations in my head. But I always felt like they were always looking out for me. And I have a couple instances where I hiked some pretty bad situations that I don't know how I made it out alive. And really? I'm pretty sure it was because I had, you know, relatives up in heaven helping
me
out.
Support.
Yeah. Right. I just felt like I was never alone, and I felt like they were helping me. So I contacted this Catherine in Australia and said I would be interested in writing a chapter for her book. And so I signed up. And it was great because there were 19 other people, and we all got on Zoom calls all at different hours of the day because they're in Australia and some were in England and I was here. And we would help each other out. We would read samples of each other's writing and help out where necessary. And we had a couple weeks. I wrote my chapter, sent it out to some beta readers and got some feedback, and edited that, and then got some feedback from Catherine from Change Empire Books. And she gave me feedback. And we all kind of worked together, and we put together a book.
Really neat.
It is really cool. So for a lot of people who want to write a book and they just don't know where to start, I thought this was really a great idea.
Yeah.
So it's being published next month.
No kidding. Excellent.
I'm not kidding.
No, that's great. Do you have any desire to go to Australia? I mean, with talking with
I have a desire to travel everywhere.
Everywhere.
I was supposed to go to Paris in high school, and it got canceled in September of 1986 because of the first subway bombing in Paris. And the school said, no, there's terrorism. We're not going. And I never got around to scheduling it again. So I scheduled it. My daughter was taking French class, and I said, you know what? I'm just going to do this. So I bought airfare. And I do a lot of home exchanging, so I arranged a home exchange in Paris. We had a nice 3-bedroom apartment that we were going to be staying in. And 2 weeks before we were set to go, the pandemic happened our flight got canceled.
Oh, dear.
So I was like, well, this isn't going to last years like the, you know, 1919 pandemic, 1918. This will be over in a few months. So I rescheduled it for the following year, which also got canceled. So 2020 got canceled. 2021 got canceled. Right. 2022, I didn't find a home exchange, and I didn't know what was going on. So I just never scheduled it again. I'm sure one day I'll go.
Oh, I'm sure. Knowing you, I'm sure.
Definitely Australia. Australia's been on the list since I saw a movie. I don't even know the name of the movie that showed Ayers Rock back in high school.
The Foreign Birds, maybe?
No, it was Meryl Streep. She played, it was a true life story about some woman that her baby got taken by a dingo.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember the name of the movie.
I've spent a lot of those around Saratoga lately. Saturday nights, a lot of dingoes.
Yes.
You know.
But I've just always been fascinated with Australia ever since I saw that movie. So.
Well, you know, I mean, I've done so many crazy things in my life. I had a couple businesses, one with a partner and a bunch by myself, and I remember being at a friend's wedding, and my attorney happened to be outside the door that we were going into, and he said, "So, Rick, what are you getting into next?" You know? But so I was bartending when I had my my landscaping and garden center business, and we had, back in Gloversville at that time, leather was still going strong. So they had a lot of leather salesmen and people that bought leather from Gloversville and Johnstown over in foreign countries to make gloves or brought sheepskin and whatever. And there was a fellow that was from Australia. No, he was from New Zealand, actually. And because I guess they raise a lot of sheep over there.
Yes.
And just his stories have always made me want to go to Australia and New Zealand. And then when you see how beautiful it is. I mean, Lord of the Rings was filmed in New Zealand.
Yes.
And, I mean, just the landscape and the hills. And
their fabulous accent.
Oh, yeah.
I just love talking to them.
Oh, I know. I love it. Love it.
I am sure I will be going. A couple of writers in the book said, hey, anytime you want to come down, you got a place to stay.
Oh, that's neat.
So the fact that I have not gotten on a plane yet to just jump down there just means, you know, I have kids and a business and I am busy. Yeah. So one day I will get there.
Let's hope this health issue will be behind us soon, because it seems like every time one of them runs through, another variant comes through and slaps more things on people, and it's sad. Now, do you plan on furthering your author role?
So years ago, as kind of a virtual way of hiking, I actually wrote my whole story down from my Appalachian Trail hike. And I just didn't get it published. I didn't have time. I didn't have time to edit it. It was 400 pages, and it just kind of sat there on the book, on a shelf. And so the publisher of this book, Catherine Mora, once she read my story, you know, it's only 4,000 words, so you can't get into too much detail if you want to actually tell a creative story. So she said, I want to know more about this. I want to know more about that. I want to know more. So she contacted me and she said, do you want to write a full book? And I said, yes, you know, I would love to write a book, but every excuse in the world, I have kids, I have a husband, I got a business, I'm busy. I don't have time to write a book. She said, if you don't make time to write your book, you're never going to make time to write your book.
Right.
And she said, if we get it published by Christmas, you need to start next week. So take your pick, yes or no. And I'm like, you know what? She's right. If I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. So next, I have to start writing my book. I started thinking about my outline and how I'm going to write it and change it and make it, you know, make sure it's interesting. Because right now, it's just in the form of a glorified trail journal.
Sure.
Which is kind of boring. You know, every trail, there's thousands of books on the Appalachian Trail out there.
Yeah.
So I have to try to figure out how to make it different.
But is there a book of the Appalachian Trail where you were chased for one day through the woods by a black bear?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, well, see, there you go.
I saw two black bears.
Put that in.
One in a zoo and one in the Shenandoah Park for about 8 seconds.
Well, no, those are some of the things that you can put in, you know, to make it a little more exciting. And you let me help you write it, and I'll have that baby swinging off the bookshelves, let me tell you. But, no, I that's fantastic. But we're a species of procrastinators, 90% of us.
Yes.
And we can always have the best ideas and intentions, but we always have reasons why we put it off. So do it. I know you. You can do it. Once you put your mind to something, you can do it.
I came up with a book idea like 6 or 7 years ago, and I only told my best friend down in Florida. And then as I was watching TV in the fall, I saw a TV show that came up with the exact same type of story. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're stealing all my stories. Wow. So it was Ordinary Joe. He made one decision, and then the story, the TV show follows his three different lives depending on what decision he made. And I came up with a book idea like that about 8 years ago of, hey, you know, in your 20s, you have to make a big decision, and then the book will, you know, span out in two or three different directions based on what decision you made. And I never did anything with it. And I saw this TV show and I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to do something.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I was trying to be creative when I was in my early 20s. And I came up with a story for a TV show called My Three Daughters. And it was about a widow who had three daughters. And so, but then I remembered that when I was a kid, it was my three sons was on TV.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel, that's where I came up with the idea. So needless to say, I never got into that.
Never did that.
April, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks so much for having me on here.
Not a problem. You've got such an exciting life. You really do. And I want to say it's nice to know you outside in Kiwanis and as a friend. So
I need to get back into Kiwanis.
Yeah, you will. You will.
I know.
I'll get on you. Don't worry. I want to thank you again and hope you come back in the future.
Thank you.
After you write your book, you know, we can do some things. So I appreciate it. And thanks for listening out there. It's the last Saturday in May, Memorial Day weekend. I think the weather hopefully is going to stay nice. It was supposed to rain yesterday and last night, and it didn't. Not in Saratoga, anywhere where I am, but anyway, I'm going to bring some sunshine into your life now. And for the next 3 hours, we have Homer Charbonneau and his fantastic music show, which is probably one of the best 3 hours in music of stations that I enjoy it. And Homer, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone.